Happy Saturday morning to you. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall, and along with Beth Kuchenberger. Happy Saturday morning to you, Beth.
Happy Saturday morning, Rob Hall. It is a beautiful day here in Monterrey, Mexico. I am excited about you having the chance to chat today. We're going to have some great guests here on the radio today.
Well, I assume that everything that's going on in Monterrey, you know, everything's going well. You've got all your guests and everything hanging out.
Yep, I hosted a little 4th of July party here in Mexico, which is kind of unusual because clearly they don't celebrate the independence of the United States. So it is. It was, you know, just me introducing everybody to sweet corn on the cob and ice cream cones and sparklers and cornhole. And I brought a little Americana right here to Mexico, which was pretty fun.
So, you know, I'm going to be down there. And so anything that I need to pack, I'm coming down here in, what, just a couple of days. What do I need to bring? What's the weather like these days in Monterrey?
You know, here's what I really want you to know. I want you to pack as little clothing as possible because it's pretty hot. That's about the truth. It's like 100-plus degrees. And I know that you're coming because we're going to be filming a documentary down here, and you're going to be part of that. And that means I have a feeling that you'll probably spend as much time behind the camera as you are in front of the camera, lugging around all those kinds of things. So, you know, carrying all that equipment, being my grip, carrying my water bottles and my Diet Coke cooler, I'm thinking you're going to be hot and sweaty, so plenty of T-shirts is all you need.
I am looking forward to being there. And I can also say that that I'm really looking forward to doing this documentary. I mean, it's not something I've done before, but being with some real professional folks doing the documentary, it should be a great experience, and I'm really looking forward to perhaps our listeners being able to grab a hold of it for Orphan Sunday.
Yeah, I really like the idea. It's tentatively titled One Over 163 Million. Of course, that figure comes from the amount of orphans that we have around the world, and we chose one orphan in particular, this really fantastic girl who's going to tell her story in this documentary and who everybody is going to get a chance to get to know. And she is, she's like an embedded journalist. I was just telling her the other day, like, I can get in front of that camera. I could be talking all about what's going on around the world with orphan care, and it's mildly powerful. You get behind it, and it's wildly powerful when you share what your life has been like.
Absolutely, and to capture that in such a way with some real professional filmmakers, it's going to be a powerful thing. I've been reading through the script and going through some of the questions and hearing Shannon talk. You know, you sent up some audio for us. It really is going to be a powerful testimony to not only the life of an orphan, but the people that come around her that allowed this to happen, people that she's never met, people who interact with her every day. I mean, it is going to be a great production. I'm looking forward to being a part of it.
I mean, really, anytime anybody tells their own story in a way that's compelling, it's just, it moves you. I mean, you and I like stories. That's the whole reason we started the radio show. We wanted people to come up here and tell their stories. And today is no different. We've got some great stories who are going to be on today.
Yeah, the director of Poverty Cure, Michael Matheson Miller, is going to be on, and Poverty Cure doing some great stuff. I noticed today, and I'll do it on the intro, they have over 1 million followers on Facebook at Poverty Cure. I mean, they are interacting with a lot of people, doing some great things. And then after the bottom of the hour break, Bishop W.C. Martin is going to be on. And Bishop Martin, as I mentioned at the end of last week's show, he has more energy like when he's asleep than when I'm fully awake. He's written a book called Small Town, Big Miracle, How Love Came to the Least of These. And he's been on, you know, the Today Show. He's been on Oprah. I mean, he's all over the place. So I am really looking forward to just introducing him and letting him start to talk.
Don't you like it when people get there kind of like, you know, 2 minutes in the sun, and then they stay exactly who they always were? Like Bishop Martin was on Extreme Home Makeover and Oprah and all these things that could have, like, part of his storyline is he's from a really small town in Texas called Possum Trot, and I'm sure he'll tell us all about Possum Trot. But Possum Trot has, like, you know, like the total population of maybe 200 people. And after all of the things and exposure he's had all around the United States, he still lives in Possum Trot. And I mean, that gives him some serious street cred, in my opinion.
Absolutely, you're right. I mean, so many people kind of find their way, stumble the way sometimes into notoriety, and it changes everything about them. But when he's on, our listeners will know that he's as genuine as they come, and so it's going to be a great opportunity to talk with him. So he'll be on at the after the bottom of the hour. Anything else happening in the Guckenberger? You're getting ready to move. That's a big thing. I mean, our listeners probably don't know this.
Yes, my husband and I are moving from one country to another, and you know, I don't know
you're
how you
bring
and
your children too, aren't you?
Yes, and also.
Okay, they're coming with you too. Good.
All of my children, and so we had this big packing day yesterday, and this is the difference between Beth Guckenberger and Todd Guckenberger. Todd is like the very definition of efficiency. You know, he. It was like, you know, we're taking nothing to heaven, so why the heck are we taking it across the border? And I am like, everything was a story, and I had to relive the story, and I wanted to open up all the letters, and I wanted us all to look at the pictures, and I wanted us to remember when these certain books meant something in our life.
Oh,
and it was
packed a box, for goodness sake.
That was a version of the earlier part of the conversation. That escalated as the day went on, but the kids kept bringing me dark chocolate and Diet Coke, and they were like, Mama, just keep making yourself feel good. Let's keep going. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It was.
You can have that conversation. You can do all that when you unpack the boxes. See, that would be a better thing. We should probably let people know you're moving back to the United States.
For a period of time.
They probably are now saying, where are they moving to? They're moving back to the U.S.,
Yeah, 17 years. We've lived in Mexico. We're moving back to the U.S. for a period, an undetermined amount of time, to give some more centralized attention to the back-to-back ministries staff and where they're growing around the world. And we need to come off of the field and be in a place where we're more accessible. So with that comes my first time pretty much living in the U.S. as an adult. I mean, I left when I was 23. And so I'm just curious. Like, when you go to dinner at someone's house, like somebody invites you over to dinner, what time of the night do you leave? Not like your BFFs, but like your average Joe.
Like when you go home?
Yeah, like what time of the night are you like wrapping it up?
Probably, you know, it depends on when you start. So if you start dinner around 6:30 or 7.
Which, by the way, is so American, but go ahead.
Yes, well, that's why I'm telling you. I mean,
When
you come to our house, you can stay as long as you want. But if you're at somebody else's house, you know, maybe 9 o'clock, something like that. I'm looking at TC through the windows. 9 o'clock, you know, so a couple hours. You kind of have some small talk and some appetizers before, and then you sit down for dinner, and then you have some small talk after, and that takes a couple hours. And then it's kind of like that awkward, am I going to stay for a long time, or do I wrap it up now? And so if you don't know them that well, you wrap it up now.
And what about, here's another thing. Well, that would be totally different in Mexico.
This would be a great question for our Facebook page. I think I'm going to post that on our Facebook page. What time or how long should a dinner party last?
Okay, here's another question. You're not my BFF, but I invite you to dinner at my house. And let's say it would be very Mexican for me to also think about somebody else I want you to get to know that you don't know. And I might invite a third party to eat with us without telling you. And then when you get there, it's like a big prize. Like, you know, it's a gift you get to open. Like, in the United States, if I invite you to dinner and I invite a third party, do I need to tell you first?
If you don't know me that well, you probably do. I mean, if it was me and you, like if it was the Halls coming to the Guckenberger's house, we would just show up and be like, oh, hey, cool, hey, who are these people? But if you're, like, wanting to get to know me and you don't know me that well and you're wanting me to sort of network with these other people, it's probably a better thing to say, hey, Rob, love to have you and Christine over for dinner. By the way, we're going to also invite the Smiths, right?
Okay.
Things to ponder. Hey, we got a great show, and we hope that you'll join us right after the break. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll ponder bigger questions in this at that point, but make sure you join us right after this break.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through Back-to-Back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the Back-to-Back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. By the way, if you want to listen, follow along, tap into any old shows, any of that kind of stuff, you can follow us on reallifewithbethandrob.com or hit us up on our Facebook page, which I think I've just decided we're going to have a long list of questions, maybe just one a week, maybe two a week, how to introduce Beth Guckenberger back to American society, American culture. I think it's a great idea.
Well, like, here's a question. Let's say okay. I invite you out to dinner. Not you personally.
These are a lot of dinner questions.
Well, I'm thinking, like, I've got to get social. Yeah. I'm going to come to
us.
I've got to be
in Mexico that dinner with people is a very big, important thing.
I mean, we have a lot of tacos in this country.
Okay,
so I'm thinking, I invite you out to dinner. Do I pay for your dinner if
no.
I invited you? No.
Not necessarily.
Everybody goes Dutch in the U.S.
Well, it depends. I mean, if it's a business dinner and you've invited me out for business.
No,
this is going to be great on Facebook because people are going to say, Rob, you're an idiot. This is how we would do it. I do think that
I like that. Let me come up with some more questions.
Of Americans. Maybe I'm not, but if it's a business dinner and you invite me out, like, hey, I want you to be on the show or you pay for it. But if it's just like, hey, we're going out to dinner and all that kind of stuff, it's a nice thing to do, but you don't necessarily have to. But I'll tell you this, decide right at the beginning. So like when the person comes and says, hi, I'm Rob. I'll be your server tonight. What can I get for you? And when you do that right at the beginning, you should say at the beginning, hey, this is going to be one check. And that way it just...
Like just a shot in the air there. So then you awkwardly make those other people... have that conversation in front of the server? Okay, listeners?
But basically, you get rid of the conversation. You basically say, hey, I'm taking care of this.
Okay,
and
well.
If it's not spoken up at the beginning, usually then it's assumed that it's separate checks.
Okay. Well, listeners, if you agree that Rob is not anybody's idea of, you know, the etiquette king, please respond on Facebook and get us all on the right page. I need your help.
I'm telling you. But I'm going to start posting questions. The reintroduction of Beth and Todd Guckenberger to America. And people can chime in. All right, we've got more important things to move on to. Michael Matheson Miller is with us. He is the director of Poverty Cure. And Poverty Cure is an international coalition of over 230 partner organizations, 143 countries. I mentioned in the opening segment, 1 million fans on Facebook. Producer of education media and resources, DVDs, books. I mean, these guys are everywhere. And Michael, who's going to be on, he's sort of the voice of Poverty Cure. And so, Michael, welcome to the show. We are glad that you're here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you.
Absolutely.
You know, Michael, I got a hold of the Poverty Cure 6-part DVD series from a mutual friend. I live internationally and have worked among the poor for the last, 17 years. And there's been a movement in the last couple years to try to be more intentional, more purposeful, to invite the conversation, to not assume that people are uneducatable. I don't even know if that's a word. But to take the time to really build the framework, the platform on which people can be smarter about their international development and relief. And so, anyway, I feel like this is a really important part of that library, and I wanted to draw attention to it to our listeners here on XM. So tell us, just to give our listeners a little background, what is Poverty Cure? What is this DVD series about, and how did that idea come to be?
Well, thanks so much. Yeah, the Poverty Cure, I mean, I think it comes to this, you know, we tend to look at poor people, right, or poverty, or we see something going wrong, and we say, oh my goodness, you know, what can I do? How can I alleviate poverty? What can we do to alleviate poverty? But really, I think that's not the best question, right? I think a better question is, not what I what can I do to alleviate poverty, but how do people in the developing world create prosperity for their families and their communities? And so this little shift, well, it doesn't seem like much, but it actually changes the direction of the question. So we go away from us, what can I do, to how do people in the developing world create prosperity for their families and communities? And so I think sometimes when we do charity, I mean, this is well-intended people across mm-hmm. the board, mm-hmm. we can sometimes tend to treat people as the objects of our charity. But people are not objects. People are subjects. They are the protagonists of their development. And so one of the goals in Poverty Cure is to really reframe the discussion, to reframe the way we think about people and poor people and poor communities. You know, a lot of times you'll hear people say, golly, if the United States were just more generous, or if, you know, Europeans were just more generous, we could really end poverty. So, I mean, for example, you know, and among Christians, I've heard Christian leaders say, you know, if Christians in North America just got together and we could get money together, we could give money to the developing world and we could end poverty. And I said, well, you know, we should be more generous, okay? I mean, and if for Christians, take this seriously. I mean, the Bible says very clearly that pure religion is to take care of the widow and the orphan in their distress, right? So we should be more generous. But the idea somehow that we could, if we just gave more money to the developing world, we would end poverty is false, because people aren't poor because they don't have stuff. People are poor because they lack the conditions of justice that allow entrepreneurs and business people to create prosperity in their own families and communities. So that's one side. On the big public side, you have this idea of like foreign aid. You know, this well-intended, I think, idea saying, you know, listen, we're rich, they're poor, and this idea is if we could just marshal large sums of money, send it over to the developing world, we could jumpstart the process of development. And the problem is it really hasn't worked, and the data seems, you know, tends to show that. But it also has some other negative effects, right? It delays the development of business in Africa. It keeps Africa behind, right? Mm-hmm. It often can end up being crony capitalism, where instead of the money getting sent over, you know, from our government or European government to a developing country, right? Instead of the money to go, it doesn't just go from like us right to the poor people. It goes to the governments, and the governments will say, get a big contract to build a bridge. Well, who do you think often gets the contract to build the bridge? Well, an American or a European company. So it actually becomes a subsidy to companies from the developed world. And this is crony capitalism. And so the poorest of the poor, and even the small and medium producers, are just not able to develop. And so we wanted to say, let's rethink it. And as you said, you know, let's not have this idea in our head that poor people somehow are stuck there forever, right? That they have lots of potential, just like we do. So what is it that's different? Well, we have sometimes the conditions of justice that allow us to flourish, and sometimes they don't. Let's rethink the discussion and then have real, you know, I think an interesting dialogue. Let me say one last thing, and that is there's no single solution to end poverty. Right? It's a complex problem, but I think if we can begin with the human person, create an image of God with creative capacity, then it changes everything about the way we think about and talk about development. And that's kind of the themes behind Poverty Cure.
Now, I know that the DVD series, The Rethink Poverty, there's 6 episodes. They're 25-ish minutes long. Walk us through what those 6 episodes are. I would, as Beth said, there's just great resources, and I'd love for people to get an idea of what the resources are so that they anticipate bringing them into their library.
Right. Well, the series, as you said, is a 6-part, 152-minute kind of documentary-style series. And each of this, there's each of the things deals with kind of different issues. So the first one is charity that hurts. So we talk about some of the things I just talked about, like how we have really good intentions to help the poor, but sometimes our charity actually makes things worse. So we deal with that, and there's stories in there, and people from the developing world kind of telling you how their experiences. The second is about the entrepreneurial calling, and this is really about how the human person has creative capacity and how there's all this entrepreneurship going in the developing world, from microfinance to small and medium-sized companies, and some of the struggles they face and what we could do to kind of help and participate with that. And like one thing, you know, if you look, for example, in the United States, quickly, or Europe, most of the employment and most of the GDP actually comes from small and medium-sized companies, right? But if you look in the developing world, there's a whole host of tiny micro company enterprises and, you know, a good number of large, but the small medium sector has just not been developed. And so we address that question, like, why is it? It's private property rights. It's lack of financing. Anyway, that takes us into the third, which is called justice for the poor. And we talk about really private property rights and clear title and the ability to start and register and build businesses, rule of law, fairness in front of the law. So one of the stories there is Hernando de Soto is a very famous Peruvian economist, and he did a study of a small business woman with like two sewing machines or something. And he sent out some student lawyers every day on the buses, just like a poor person would have to do, to go out and to say how long and register the business. Well, how long do you think it took those lawyers to register this business into the formal sector? Well, it took 289 days. Okay.
Yikes.
That's right. And so we can't even imagine this. We can't imagine not having private property, right? And so, what, as De Soto said, I think very powerfully, you know, the legal system is often unfriendly to poor people, and so a lot of Christians, a lot of people are concerned with social justice. But really, I think the foundations of social justice are, first of all, of course, the right to life, but also just private property title, allow fairness before the before rule of law. These are not highly romantic. You know, you say it's hard to get a wristband,
right,
about like rule of law wristband. You know, I mean, I wish we could have rule of law wristbands, but these are essential qualities for promoting justice for the poor. And then the fourth one goes into circles of exchange. One of the guys I interviewed, his name is Doug Seebeck. He runs a group called Partners Worldwide, which operates in about 20 countries and promotes business development. And Doug said, you know, he's a young man. He went to Bangladesh and was working there. And they said, you know, the famous saying that, you know, give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach a man to fish, he eats for a lifetime. Well, Doug realized, wait a minute. For a lot of the people in the developing world, they know how to fish. They know how to farm. What they lack is access to the pond. They have the capacities. They're there, but they're excluded from circles of exchange and networks of productivity. So, for example, we put high tariffs on people importing our goods, and then we send over subsidized rice or subsidized corn or, you know, free as aid or subsidized, and we disempower local farmers. We don't let them compete. So we talk about when people are given the opportunity to compete, and we tell stories of different countries. We tell the story of Ireland, which is a very interesting example, especially for, you know, we're dealing with the developing world. But and how, when people are given the opportunity, they create prosperity for themselves. And then the fifth and sixth focus on the redemptive power of the gospel. We tell the story of the Rwandan genocide, and especially the work of Immaculate Ilibigisa and Bishop John Ruchana. Some of your listeners may know Immaculate wrote a book called Left to Tell. And Immaculate's whole family was killed in the Rwandan genocide, everybody but her brother, who was out of the country. And she survived for about, I think it was 90 days with eight other women in a small little bathroom, you know, 3 by 4 feet. And then she's been working on reconciliation since then. So we tell that story. And then the final one is what churches and communities and culture and families, how they play a role. So this is the idea. And the goal is really to, you know, to hear the voices of people from, you know, from whether it's experts, from Paul Collier from Oxford University, or Marcela Escobar from Harvard, to Joshua Omoga, a Kenyan businessman who borrowed $8 to start a business. And
Michael,
reframe the debate.
We got about 30 seconds, and I want to make sure that people know where to get the DVD series. In just a couple seconds, where can they find it?
Sure, you can get it at povertycure.org, and you can get it on Amazon.com. So povertycure.org or Amazon.com. It's called the Poverty Cure DVD series.
Michael, thanks so much for being with us. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we will be back with Bishop W.C. Martin right after this break.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care, at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Ibram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we are excited to have you with us this Saturday morning. Now, I think that was a very interesting segment there about PovertyCure.org. I mean, those guys are doing some really good work.
They are doing awesome work, and I was glad that we got through. I know I felt bad having to, at the end there, just a few seconds left, but that DVD series, I mean, if you are interested in or involved in justice, working with the poor, this is something that you need to have in your library.
Microfinance.
It's put together incredibly well, and just such important things to think through. Just even the first, we talked about it before, charity that hurts. People with the best intentions can sometimes have just the worst of unintended consequences about, you know, what their good work is supposed to be doing. And so that's just the beginning of the 6-part series. So again, PovertyCure.org is where you want to go to get that DVD series. It's definitely worth the time to do so.
Yeah, you know, and I told him that he's a part of a growing library, the When Helping Hurts, the We Are Not Heroes, some of those folks that we've had on the radio before. You know, certainly now we can see more. There's just a lot of good information, and we have no excuse not to do it well.
Well, we are going to shift gears here, and I am so excited to hear our next guest, Bishop W.C. Martin. He's written a book, but that's only just the smallest part of this story. The book is Small Town, Big Miracle, How Love Came to the Least of These. It's from Focus on the Family Books. But that, as I said, the book is just this smallest part of what is an incredibly great story. And it's so great to have him on with us. So, Bishop Martin, welcome to the show. We are so glad to have you here.
Well, it's such a blessing to be able to tell the radio world what a good and awesome God we have and we serve.
Amen. Bishop Martin, I saw you a couple months ago at the Orphan Summit where you were being interviewed by Dennis Rainey there on Family Life Radio, and I was moved by the whole story, really, of Pasen Trot, Texas. And for our listeners who haven't seen you on Oprah or Extreme Home Makeover or Family Life or any of the other myriad of media outlets who've covered your story, could you just give us a quick summary about when and how the Pasen Trot story started?
Well, we started back in, I think, in the early part of, latter part of the 90s, like about 2000, I mean, like 1999. And my wife, burden on her heart concerning the death of her mother. And as a result of it, you know, when the Lord spoke in our spirit and told her it's time to give back, and we was concerned about what, so we got to give and found out. It's just that God wanted us to give back, and come to find out, he wanted us to give back to a child who did not have that type of, you know, that type of love, that type of support that was given to her by her mother. And that's how everything got started.
And so you contacted the local children's services?
Yes, we contacted them, and they was able to get us in what they call pride classes here in Texas, and we went there for 12 long weeks, and afterwards we had begun to you know, to adopt children, and it was so amazing and so powerful until there was others who looked at what we was doing, and they didn't realize, you know, what an awesome thing this was. And we didn't either, to be honest with you, because we just doing what we thought, you know, what we thought that people would do. We had no clue. And as a result of it, it just, the media got involved in it, because when CPS came down, they came down and said that, and we talked with them, we were trying to find a way to raise money to do some things in our area, because Shelby County is a very poor county, and as well as we're in a very poor area. So we were trying to do some things to raise some money to help our children, you know, in school, and do a lot of things for them. But the Lord had a plan already, and so after the results of it, she called one of the, I think it was the Houston Chronicle, she called a guy and said, look, I got a hot tip for you. There's a little small church in the woods that has been adopting the children. And next thing we know, that was that Sunday evening, and that Tuesday we had the Houston Chronicle in our midst.
Now, I know that initially, Bishop, you adopted 4 children. And two of them was special needs, and this wasn't something that you thought, hey, we want our church to catch the vision for, but that's exactly what happened. How did that happen? How did it go from your sort of personal mission, being responsible and respectful of the Lord's call to you? How did that then translate to your church catching this vision?
Well, what happened there? You know what we done? We begun to. I looked up every scripture I could find that had something to do with adoption, and I didn't realize that through God we all are adopted. I didn't have a clue at that time that through God that we all is adopted, and mm-hmm. That was to me, that was one of the most amazing things that I could ever think about, that God had adopted us. So, and when I went back and explained everything to our church and told them all about it, then that's when they began to move in that area to adopt. And since then, it just went crazy.
If you had to guess how many children have now been serviced by the folks in your congregation, where do you think that number is today?
That have not been serviced?
That have been. How many kids have been impacted by the members of your congregation?
Well, I say that all total we adopted like 72 children, and we have less than, I got probably maybe 100, 125 members. And the amazing thing about that, and all of them, the majority, I say about 60 of them is probably from our congregation.
That's pretty amazing. In case, I just want to reiterate that, 120 or 125 people in the congregation, 60
right.
to 72 children
mm-hmm.
adopted. I mean, this is a story worth telling, and I'm so glad that not only has it been told, on various media outlets, but in the book as well. What was it like to then try to capture all this in book form? How did that come about?
Well, I had to speak at Focus on the Family in Colorado, spring one year. And when I got up there, the Lord just impressed on my heart to tell them, because I went to that bookstore and saw what they had been doing, books and all that kind of stuff. And I just went up there and told them, hey, look, y'all got something. I got something you want. You got something I want. I said, you all can use my talent to go anywhere you want to and speak for you, but I want a book. That's what I told them. I want a book. So
yeah.
they met on it, and it was a unanimous vote that they should do that book. So as a result of it, we got that done. It just went like I don't know what. It did. It did. They were so excited about the book. It taken us like about maybe 18 months to get that book done, but we got it out, and the book has been going good. The small town big deal is the key and the answer to anybody who's interested in getting involved in adoption. It is so much in that book that will help you to understand the reality of adoption. It also will help you understand that there is nothing easy about adoption. There is some problem in adoption, but ultimately, so God will give you the strength and the mind to overcome every obstacle that you will go through in order for you to adopt a child.
I need a little pastoring this morning, Bishop Martin, because those of us who have been in adoption and foster care, we know the opposition that comes against that, that this is something that makes the enemy mad, that he picks those kids off the tree like they're the low fruit hanging. And I believe wholeheartedly that Jesus is asking the church to stand between the child and that enemy that wants to take them. And so tell us as a church, how is it that we are to respond?
Well, here's the thing of it is, and I can concur with what you're saying because of what the church stands for. And see, it was the church if you go back, and I have to tell you like this in order for you to understand, if you go back and look at the Bible, adoption was not a man-made thing in the beginning. It was all a God thing. And if anybody reads the Bible frequently, you will find out that Moses was an adopted child. Esther was an adopted child. And one that I really run into the problem with that people just can't see, Jesus was an adopted child. Because for the most part, Joseph was not, in other words, Joseph did not plant the seed for Jesus to come. The Bible said that she was overshadowed and she was conceived by the Holy Ghost. So that tells us right there that that girl was already pregnant when Joseph got with her. So that's the first thing that the church needs to understand. Then the next thing the church needs to understand is that what God has called the church to do, because it's the church that has been adopted out of the darkness into the marvelous light. And this
Bishop,
is what we get the church.
Can you join us after the break?
Yes.
Yes,
he's just
great.
Getting going. Heck yeah, he can.
Rolling, and I can't wait for him to keep talking when we come back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we hope you'll be back with us right after this break.
Who's weaving your story? The Storyweaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great Storyweaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Storyweaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. Beth, how are you this morning, by the way?
I'm so good, and I'm even better now because I just got a little shot of the Holy Ghost all there via the teaching of Bishop Martin, who was just telling us a minute ago why it is the church's responsibility to stand in front of the orphan.
Yes, Bishop W.C. Martin is with us. He is the author of Small Town Big Miracle, How Love Came to the Least of These. And right before the break, Bishop Martin had just begun to talk a little bit about the church's responsibility in its role in adoption. And so I had to cut you off. And so I apologize about that. But welcome back to the show.
Yeah, we're glad to be back. The church, see, what I believe that when God spoke the church, or when the church, the birthday of the church, He gave us an inner power to be able to accomplish and conquer everything on this earth. That's biblically sound. But the thing of it is, what I think we have failed at, we have done pretty good in a lot of ministries and a lot of areas, but we had not tapped into the real, what I call real ministry work. Real ministry work, and that's not the only entity in the church, but we have the responsibility in our communities now that we got to save a generation of children that the system itself doesn't have the power to do. We got to bring them into our congregation, nourish them, and teach them. If a little church, small church like Denny Chapel, has fall back off in the woods, and less than 125 people in there, and a lot of them are young folks anyway, can accomplish that many children, what would happen if we get a church with a larger church involved in it? It would just completely just null and void this system that we call adoption. If you get a church, man, you know, 10,000 members get involved in adoption. Mm. Do you realize what will happen to this adoption system? We can blow that place up.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that idea because absolutely, you know, it's God's win-win. I mean, it's of course the win for the child who begins to understand the way a family works, and it's a win for the family because as they lay their life down for one another, God fills up those broken places. When they pour out, God fills up in a way we can't mess with that kind of economy. That's the way He works. And then as a church is full of people who are alive in those ways, that church cannot not be transformed. And it just feels like a win-win-win. I don't not know why more people don't follow that example that you've set there in Possum Trot.
Well, that's what it's all about. That's what we need to do. And that's what we have to maintain and keep our focus in getting done. Because it is a win-win situation. Everybody wins. The children win. The parents win. And, you know, I really believe this, that for the most part, if we allow some children to come in our home, it'll be a wake-up call to a home. You know, and that's what I'm saying. It'll be a win-win situation. Everybody will be blessed in doing so.
Yeah.
Everybody. The children will be blessed. The church can really see what they can raise up a nation of people that will obey and that will be able to take care of the things that of God, because we got folks in church, you know, they, a lot of time they get so complacent, but you get some young folks in there that you can train and raise up who really love God and teach them what loving God is all about. I think it would mean a whole lot to that church.
Well, I know, Bishop Martin, I know a lot of work went into producing the book, getting published. Where can our listeners find the book?
Yes. The book, Small Town Big Miracle, is an awesome book, and it's going throughout the country, and people are buying this book all over the world now, and it is doing a magnificent job for the nation itself, because what it's doing is teaching us what adoption is really all about. You see, it's a good thing to be able to look at a situation, but really not knowing the in-depths of it. But you talking to one who's been there, done that, and got a T-shirt to prove it, to know that, hey, what's this thing really all about when it comes to adoption? And as a pastor, a father, a husband, a leader in the community, I would encourage any pastor across this nation, if you really want to get involved in something, put some life into a child that does not know what life is all about. Because when you start dealing with these children, I can go as far and tell you that many of them don't even know what love is all about. I talked to one little boy, and he told me that he said, all I ever wanted in life was a mother and a father. He was 9 years old. 9 years old, said, all I ever wanted was just a mother and a father. And love, they don't know what love is all about because nobody ever taught them love.
Yeah. Well, Bishop Martin, we are so glad that you took the time to be on the show this morning. And nothing but blessings to you and the congregation in Possum Trot as well as around this book. So thanks so much for being on the show.
God bless you. And anybody would love for me to come to their church and help them to get adoption ministers set up. You can. I'm available at any given time. At any time you call me, we will be able to come and help you to get an adoption ministry set up in your church. God bless all of you and have a blessed day.
Thank you,
Bishop Martin. Blessings to you as well.
Okay, then. Bye-bye.
He's serious about that I'm available thing. I mean, we just called him on his cell phone to see if he could be on the show, and he said, you just tell me when, honey, and I'll be on it. This is what I want to say. So, I mean, I'm confident that if you are a listener and you think, I want to do on a different scale what it is that God did in Possum Trot, and you want to invite him into your body, I'm confident he would come and bring that kind
Absolutely.
Of energy and passion.
I do want to let everybody know that the book's available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, at your local Christian bookseller. Bishop Martin, he is so much into the message of what it is that he is passionate about. You give him the opportunity to plug the book, and he just wants to talk about the ministry. And so I want to make sure the listeners know where they can get it. Amazon.com, any local Christian bookseller, Barnes & Noble, any of those places, you can find it. Small Town, Big Miracle, How Love Came to the Least of These. That guy, I knew it. Once he got rolling, that the energy was, I could feel it all the way here in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Amen to that. I could feel it here in Monterey, Mexico. And I do I do like the storyline, though, regardless of him or even his community. I do like the storyline that it always starts with the spark. It starts with the woman who lost her mother and wanted to give the kind of love that she received to somebody else. And through that personal experience, they went from one child to four. And as that pastor had that example on front in the pulpit, and he began to talk about anecdotally what was happening in his life through those miracles of adoption, that the other people in the church wanted a piece of that kind of pie too. And then that it just grows from there. And I really believe that that our life speaks loudly, and that choices you make, they make a difference. And I just think, my dear listener, you need to think about that.
Last week we had Diane Elliott on, the author of The Orphan Care Crisis. And it was interesting when hearing her talk, there's 163 million orphans. It represents, the number that are adopted represents 1% of the orphans in the world. And, a lot of times, Beth, we think about orphans as being somewhere other than the United States. There are orphans in the United States.
Absolutely,
so when we're talking about adoption, we're not necessarily just talking about international adoption. And Bishop Martin is not necessarily or primarily talking about international adoption. He's talking about adoption, which includes the millions of orphan children right here in the United States. And that 1% number that Diane brought up last week, Diane Elliott brought up last week, is really astounding. I mean, 99% of the orphans in the world are not adopted. And as Bishop Martin was so energetic about, if the church got involved in doing something about it, we would turn the adoption world upside down.
I was just in Colorado Springs a few weeks ago, and they were talking about that 8 churches got together and decided to clean out the foster care system in their county, and it made a remarkable difference. And I'm encouraged in every way by those kinds of storylines, because I hope that they inspire the church to do that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, there are great stories everywhere, and I wanted to remind people, and, you know, you don't necessarily like me doing this, but you have a new book out, Tales of the Defended Ones. You got another book coming up soon, and again, a lot of times people just need stories to inspire them or to clue them in into the need around them. So talk a little bit about your book and where they might find it.
Yes, I have written stories. You know, God's telling the kinds of stories all the time that Bishop Martin was sharing and that Diane Elliott last week highlighted. And some of those stories he's still right in front of my face. And so I recorded those as best as I know how in a couple different titles. Reckless Faith talks specifically about what we see here in Monterey. I've told stories through Relentless Hope, through some of the stories we saw in our Nigerian staff and there on that campus there in Jos, Nigeria. And we've seen in Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended One, we've went to 8 other countries around the world where we've seen what it is that God was doing around the world in places like Cambodia, in places like Ethiopia, and places like India. So I love telling stories of God's way of coming and pursuing the orphan. So you pick the title, they're in there.
Absolutely. And I know for our listeners' sake that there's a couple hundred folks in Monterey on Monterey's campus right now, and they're now creating their own stories. I don't know if they'll ever write a book about it or do anything like that, but they're creating those kind of stories themselves.
They are creating those kinds of stories, and that's what I'm always telling them. Really, the experience is not enough. To have the experience is not enough. To take the time to reflect on the experience, ask the Lord, why did you bring this person, this ministry, this whatever into my life, and then ask him to use that reflection to craft your message, because we are communicators. So whether they communicate to their immediate family and friends, or whether they make it in a larger setting through social media, or whether they create articles that are told in their church newsletter or in their local paper, whomever their story lands in, we have to always be ready for the hope that we have, and to tell the things that God is doing in us and through us. And so I'm excited about those who are doing it.